Welcome to the Beyond the Shoe Box Score Podcast, where you hear from current and former Sacred Heart student athletes and coaches. Here's your host, Dan Gardella.
What's up, everybody, and welcome back to the Beyond the Shoe Box Score Podcast. My name is Dan Gardella, always here with you for already episode number 4. We're just pumping out these episodes week by week. We've had a great lineup of guests already. Mark Nofri, EJ Anasicki, Randy Brochu was last week. Lots of great interviews. Just great to catch up with a lot of these people. And, you know, as we continue, there's going to be so many more people that I'm going to get to talk to. Players, coaches, people associated with the university, all that good stuff. But in terms of the news in the college world, nothing much has changed. If anything, now the countdown has begun to sort of set in for a lot of college athletes as we're just under 2 months away from the tip-off of the college basketball season. As of now, obviously, with COVID, everything is so fluid where things can pop up out of nowhere, and, you know, we may have to change things up as we get closer to that. But the one piece of news that did come out this week was the NCAA released their recommendations for health protocols, COVID protocols throughout the season. They recommended that each program, gets tested 3 times a week throughout the season, both men's and women's programs, so that if there are COVID tests, COVID positive tests, that they can handle them. I believe another part of the rule was that the test cannot be taken on consecutive days. They had to be spaced out just in case, you know, positive case does come out, all that kind of situation. But for now, college basketball is set to start November 25th. I know within Sacred Heart, there's been a lot of juggling, a lot of scheduling going on since the news came out last Wednesday. I know that in terms of playing a high major team, it's very unlikely for Sacred Heart unless there is a lot of money coming toward them, typically from a football school or somewhere where they can have enough money to pay Sacred Heart to come and play these games. And based on a report from John Rothstein earlier in the week, those prices, which usually I believe he said go from $75,000 to $100,000, are going to look more like $10,000 to $15,000 this year. So that's not going to incentivize mid-major schools to go play these high-major schools because the money that they would be receiving would not be remotely close to what they would get in a usual college basketball season. What I see Sacred Heart doing is a lot of regionalized games, possibly some in-state games. There's so many college basketball programs in Connecticut where they can get a lot of games against Yale and obviously Central Connecticut State's in conference. Hartford, Sacred Heart men's basketball has played over the past couple of years. Yale is right up the road. So they're that I would like to see some of those games, some more in-state games. One, obviously, it eliminates the travel concern. They're only, you know, maybe an hour max for some of these schools. I know for Yale, it's maybe 25, 30 minutes. Hartford is maybe around an hour. But those are games that you can go up, play the same day, come back. Not a whole lot of travel concern. But I know for the women's side, when I talked to head coach Jessica Minetti, she had said that there was a possibility they were looking at schools from obviously within the state, but within the MAC, Patriot League, America East, schools that are within a couple hours drive where, same situation, you can go up, play the game, drive back, not have to stay overnight anywhere, not have to worry about any of those concerns, because obviously in a time like this, you want to limit the travel concerns and staying overnight and, you know, going into a different state, and there's all the quarantine rules that go on and everything. So there's certainly a lot of chaos going around right now in terms of schedule. And that's kind of the big name right now for mid-major schools, at least, in terms of trying to get a lot of non-conference games in before conference play is scheduled. I know the Northeast Conference hasn't decided on a start to their conference season yet. That is something that's still in the works with them. They haven't released anything yet. If it goes the same way that some conferences have already announced, it'll probably be a mid to late December start, with gaps in the schedule, in the conference schedule, for makeup games in the event of COVID cases, so on and so forth. So I know for Sacred Heart, the max amount of non-conference games they can play is 9. I know from talking from somebody within the men's basketball team, they want to try and get as close to that number as possible. They're pretty confident that they can get to that number, but so many things are changing right now. You have to figure out what you're going to do, what the schedule is going to look like. So for me, I'm just excited to see when the schedule comes out and kind of be able to break that down and see what the schedule is going to turn out to. But, we're going to have to wait a little bit more for that. But anyway, we stick to the hardwood as we go to our guest of the episode. I previewed it at the end of last episode, but I'll give a little introduction to one of the best basketball players to ever play for Sacred Heart in the women's basketball program. Callan Taylor leaves Sacred Heart as the all-time leading rebounder. She had one heck of a career leading the Pioneers to two NCAA tournament appearances in 2009 and in 2012. She played overseas for a couple years and is now back in the States as a coach for Manhattan College, a team that Sacred Heart has played over the past couple years. So we talk about the weirdness of coming back to campus as an enemy across a bunch of different things, from her journey from Kansas to Connecticut, from the United States to overseas, and now from overseas into New York City to be a head coach in the MAC. So without further ado, my interview with Sacred Heart women's basketball legend, Callan Taylor.
I'm joined by one of the great players in Sacred Heart women's basketball history. She is second all-time with just over 1,800 points and first in program history with over 1,100 rebounds in her four-year career at Sacred Heart. It's Callan Taylor. Callan, thanks so much for joining me. We were just talking about it before we started recording. I'm from Fairfield and I grew up going to Sacred Heart games. So I remember going to games when you were still playing. So this is a full circle moment for me to be able to get to talk to you.
Yeah, it's my pleasure. I always love reminiscing about the good old days and talking Sacred Heart basketball. So I'm happy to be here.
So let's go back to even before you get to Sacred Heart. Growing up in Kansas, what originally drew you to the sport of basketball?
I would say my brother was definitely my motivation. He was 4 years older than me, played high school growing up, and we always would play in the driveway, and that was really got me to start loving the game. Just got super competitive, playing with him in the driveway and his friends. So he went on to play college basketball. So then that was kind of, then became my dream. So he definitely was a big reason why I chose to play college basketball, for sure.
At what age did you start to consistently beat him at one-on-ones in the driveway?
Well, I don't know about one-on-one. It took me a while. Just, he was bigger, but I would say I always feel like I had the horse, the horse games down. My shot was hard to beat. So that started at a young age, but probably not until I got into college and then we both were playing in college. And that's when it really got competitive. When we'd be home for the summers, playing with each other, doing shooting competitions, it got pretty competitive. I think it really shaped, the player I became and, led to some success. So I have a lot to thank, a lot for him to thank. Yeah.
Was there a go-to horse shot that you always seemed to beat him in, or a shot that he could never make?
So he wasn't I feel like I did more like the trick shots, rather than he would just do like the long range. Anytime it was like a long range shot, he always would beat me out. So I had to kind of get fancy with it. So I remember some backward shots and things I would have to get good at. Those are some fun memories for sure.
So let's talk about your recruitment to SHU. What was that time of your life when Ed Swanson starts recruiting you, and what was really the pitch that sold you to come to Sacred Heart?
Yeah, so I initially wanted to just get out of the Midwest. So I was looking at a lot of schools like on the East Coast and then down South. I wanted to just experience a different part of the country. So that's kind of how I kind of ended up going kind of far away. That was just really the only schools I was looking at. My boss now, Heather Boulin, was kind of the spearhead in recruiting me. And she's just, really persistent and genuine through the whole process. And that's just something that really stuck out to me was just how genuine and, just always calling me and making me feel just really comfortable through the whole process. So I went out and did my visit and I just fell in love with the campus, fell in love with the girls on the team were really welcoming. And I love Swanson's energy. as a head coach, and it just felt right. I just think when you go on visits, and you know, I did all 5 official visits that you can take, and it ended up being my last visit. But it just felt right out of all of them. So I just knew that it was the place for me.
What was the biggest adjustment coming from the Midwest to the cold Northeast?
I think just being far from home, that was at first, that took a while just to get used to, just not being, you know, close to your family and getting to see them all the time. I don't know. I think everyone says, like, you know, people on the East Coast are not as nice or rude, but I don't know. I didn't think that was the case at Sacred Heart. Everyone was super nice and welcoming. Maybe just the pace. Things were a little more fast-paced. We kind of tend to take our time in the Midwest. We're not really in a hurry. And so maybe that was something else that was a little different.
For people who obviously weren't around the Sacred Heart program when you were there, what was it like day in and day out playing for Ed Swanson?
It was great. You know, he really challenged you on and off the court, but he was very upfront and, you know, told it like it was and said, "Hey, Cal, this is what you need to work on. This is what I expect from you. This is what we need from you." So just was constantly pushing me to be my best. And even if I had a great game or I was playing really well, it was, you know, still finding those things that I could do better. And I think that's what ultimately, you know, made me become a good player, was because I wasn't settling or just, okay, yeah, I'm doing all right. I can just kind of coast. It was his constant just kind of pushing me and, you know, even that the constructive criticism, you know, from day one till, you know, the last game I played, it was always there. So that's something that, you know, and he was always fun off the court too. He would joke around and make fun and keep it light at times too off the court. So I think having that balance is important from a head coach, you know, to be serious when, you know, and intense for sure when it comes to the games, but being able to just have a conversation off the court and keep it light as well. I think that was definitely Swanson in a nutshell.
Well, so you come into Sacred Heart in 2008-2009 season, and I mean, you go 25-8, you go undefeated in the NEC, you win the conference, and you go to the NCAA tournament. How valuable is it to come into a winning program like that? And you were a big part of the success that year. You know, what did it do for you as you progressed through your career to come in immediately and be just that successful?
Yeah, I mean, and that was something that stuck out through the whole recruiting process, was the history. You know, they had just been to the NCAA tournament, like not too long, like a year or two before that. And they were, you know, winning program. So that was something that definitely stood out, just, you know, the reputation of Sacred Heart in the league. So, and then just, yeah, that was an amazing way, obviously, to start your career. Even though the season started a little rough, we started 0-5 that year. And I remember thinking, oh gosh, like, this isn't going to be good. This, like, what, how is this season going to go? Like, just thinking the worst. And then it just turned around and ended up being this amazing season. That was kind of a goal of mine going into college, was just, I wanted to make an impact right away. And I wanted to go somewhere that I knew I could play like 40 minutes a game, because I love the game so much. So even sitting out in practice killed me. So I knew I wanted to go somewhere that I could play a lot, make an impact, and leave a legacy. So that was definitely a nice way to kind of catapult my career. But it was, yeah, definitely an amazing year and set the bar pretty high from there on out.
And then you continue throughout your career, and then your senior year, you do the exact same thing. You win the conference and you go back to the NCAA tournament. How do the two titles, how do they differ in your mind based on, you know, where you were in your basketball career?
Yeah, the freshman year one, I feel like I was more of a role player that year. Just even though I was a starter and had some great games and in the tournament, made that all tournament team and everything. I still feel like that was just kind of, I was more of just kind of the role player, did my job, made my shots, passed it inside to Caitlin Sawinski, rebounded my butt off. So I feel like that year I just kind of went in and did my job, and I had a lot of stars around me, Elisa Apo and a lot of seniors that year that were a big part of the reason why we were so successful. So I think that year I was just trying to do whatever the team needed of me. And then senior year was a little different. I felt like the light was a little more on me. So there's a little more pressure to perform well and kind of be that star. And then kind of just having to, keep playing as well as I could, but also notice that, okay, there is going to be more concentration and focus on me. So if I have to, just get 10 rebounds and more assists this game and other people score, that's going to be how it is. So that senior year was just kind of handling the pressure, I think, more. And we didn't have a great season. Like freshman year, we went undefeated. That year it was kind of up and down, and we just had a lot of people step up that year. So that year was extra special because it just felt like we fought it out in the end. So they were both amazing years for their own reasons, but and I mean, you can't ask for a better way to kind of bookend your career with two championships. So it was, yeah, awesome.
So I'm going to ask you this, and you can take as long as you need to answer it. In a game to 11, who wins, freshman Callan Taylor or senior Callan Taylor? And what would the score be?
Oh, wow. That's a tough one. I feel like senior Callan Taylor would probably win, just because I did grow a lot as a player and develop different parts of my game. But I feel like it'd be a pretty good game. So probably win by two, senior Callan Taylor. I feel like it'd be pretty tight.
Okay.
Super competitive. So.
So now that you've been a couple years removed from playing at Sacred Heart, now that you look at the program, they are still continuing the success that was there when you were there. They have still made the NCAA tournament every single year that they've been a part of the conference. They've had success in the postseason as well as the regular season. What does it mean to you to see the success continue through the program that was, I want to say, close to its peak when you were there winning championships?
Yeah, I mean, that's what you want to see from your alma mater, is just a team that's just in a program that just continues to pursue excellence, and that's kind of what's expected now, I feel like. So I feel like it's nice to see them succeed, and we've even played them a couple times here at Manhattan and lost, and so that's always bittersweet, because it's, you want to see your alma mater doing really well, but obviously as a coach you want to win. So that's always been interesting. But yeah, no, I think it's amazing how well they're doing in the NEC. And even though the league has changed a little bit since when I played, there's different teams in there now. So I love watching and just keeping up with the league, because it is kind of changing and there's new coaches and everything. So even though it looks different, it is cool to see that they're always having a lot of success, because I think as an alum, you always want to leave your mark and kind of leave that, like I said, that kind of pursuit of excellence, and have that be almost an expectation.
Yeah. And you said, you have had to play Sacred Heart a couple times in your coaching career as the opponent. Yep. What have those emotions been like when you come to, because I know a couple years ago you played them at the Pitt Center. What was it like to come back on campus, but now you're the opposition?
Yeah, that one was really weird when at the Pitt Center, just because you have all those emotions, you know, and the all the memories kind of flooding your memory. But yeah, so definitely weird being on the, you know, other bench. But it's fun. It's still competitive at the end of the day. You know, I bleed Manhattan College now, and like I'm so. Like I said, I'm super competitive, so obviously always just want to win. But it at the end of the day, it is nice to see them doing well. So it's definitely an interesting kind of pull there, but it's always fun to go back.
Well, since you've been back, you know, the campus has expanded so much, even since you were a student there. Just talk about what it's like for an alum to come back and see all these new buildings and the campus continuing to grow.
Yeah, I mean, that's another thing as an alum, you get super excited and proud about. When we played there, I remember just driving up in the bus and seeing, you know, all these new buildings and dorms and a diner and all these things. And it's just, it is pretty cool, and have your players, you know, think it's pretty cool too. And, as an alum, it makes you feel really proud. And I'm always excited to go back, 'cause I know I'm always going to see something new. I just wish it was there. Half those things were there when I was there, I guess.
Because 2012, I mean, you didn't have the upper quad, you didn't have the diner, you didn't have the Bobby Valentine Center that just opened last year. So it's certainly been a change since you were a student there. But moving on, after your playing career at Sacred Heart, you continue your playing career overseas. You became the eighth pioneer to do that. You play four seasons overseas. What was that experience like? You know, you talked about going from the Midwest to the Northeast. What was going from the United States to overseas?
Yeah, I mean, I think that only helped me. Moving far from home for college only helped me make, you know, that jump even easier. I absolutely loved every season and every team and every country I got to play in. Those were experiences I wouldn't have changed for the world. So just fortunate that, you know, Sacred Heart kind of allowed me, you know, to get to that point and, you know, have the career that I had, let me become a professional and get to travel the world and keep playing the game that I love. So as far as kind of moving away and living in other countries, that was really pretty easy for me now that I had kind of been away from home for 4 years.
And when you had played overseas, your professional career, you were incredibly successful with MVPs, leading teams in scoring and rebounding. And you know, while that your career was kind of short-lived, you come back and you go to coaching. Why leave all that success in professional basketball?
Yeah, you know, that was something I actually struggled with a whole year. So my first year at Manhattan, I was the director of operations. So I was just a GA. And that was the whole entire year. I really struggled with that. I was like, did I make the right decision? Gosh, should I have kept playing? You know, going back and forth, the grass is always greener on the other side kind of a thing. So I actually went back overseas. So there was a couple months left. The season in Portugal where I'd ended up my last season, and my coach had texted me, hey Callan, you know, we really could use you for these last couple months for playoffs. Is there any way you could come back for 2 months? So I was like, oh my goodness, like this is the message I've been waiting for. Like this is a sign. Like I think I just need to go back one last time and just really, you know, get it out of my system. So I asked Heather, my boss now, Coach Woolen, if, you know, I could go over there for a couple months. I was, you know, I was a GA, so I wasn't really like getting paid or anything. So the season was going to be over. Our season at Manhattan was going to be over. So I went over for two more months, got to play in some playoff games. And I think that was really what kind of hit me. Okay, no, coaching and being in the States is what I want to do and what I, you know, I'm kind of made me happy, you know, the decision that I made. But I think I needed to go back over there one time and just get it out of my system. And it was also cool because my brother, who has been such a role model for me, had never had the chance to make it over to see me play. So knowing that this was probably going to be it, he got to come over and see me play. So that was finally all came full circle. But it was a really tough decision because it's something, it's something you love and you're kind of hard to hang up the shoes. But I think ultimately I just wanted to start getting, start on a career that was going to be more long-term. And I wanted to kind of settle down a little bit, be home and closer to my family. So it was, even though it was tough, I know it was the right decision for me.
What's the best story that you have from your playing career overseas?
Oh man, there's so many. My parents, it took them 3 seasons to get over to visit. And they said that my dad had always come to games at Sacred Heart. He would even drive from Kansas, which is like a 16-17, 18-hour or maybe even 20-hour road trip. I don't know. It's crazy amounts of hours. But he would come out to games all the time and like it was nothing. So, I figured they'd be over in the first country that I was in. But it actually wasn't until the third country that they came over. And it happened to be Australia, which is also like the furthest possible point. It's just pretty funny that leave it to my parents to, they're like, no, we want you to go to the furthest possible country on the other side of the world until we come visit. So, but that was awesome. Getting for them to see me play that my first time overseas professionally was a really cool moment.
Well, it seems like if they're willing to make a 20-hour car trip from Kansas to Connecticut, they'll make a, 15-hour plane ride to Australia.
Right.
Well, so now we move to your coaching career at Manhattan. Like you said, you started as director of basketball operations and then you moved to an assistant coach. And one of your main responsibilities is international recruiting. How does playing and having that international background help you recruit players to come to the States?
Yeah, it's been an awesome resource. Was able to make a lot of connections, obviously, when I was over there in different countries, whether it be with agents or coaches and just teammates. So I try to just continue to use those contacts and reach out and just share my experience of getting to play in another country. And it's been a lot of fun to recruit internationally because I know how awesome it is to be able to experience life and basketball in another country. So helping those girls get over here and play college basketball in America and in New York City and the greatest city, it's a really fun part of my job is to connect with international recruits for sure.
And then last season, as you're coaching, the NEC comes out with their all-decade team and you were named to the all-decade team, even though your first season didn't even count toward the decade, you still were able to land on the list. And there's a video going around of your players going and asking you for autographs. What was it like when you found out that you were a part of that group of the best players in the NEC in the 2010s?
Yeah, that was awesome when it came out on Twitter, and it just I kept getting like these notifications and people kind of commenting and sending it to me. So it was an awesome honor. There's been some amazing players throughout the years in the NEC to just be on that list is truly an honor. And, I'm just thankful for my time at Sacred Heart and everybody in the conference who enjoyed, coaching against me. And it was just an awesome kind of another way to just leave a legacy. And when my players all gathered around, that was a cool moment too. Just to they were obviously kind of poking fun, but it's always fun to just when your players get excited for you, for sure.
And then I'll leave with this. You talk about leaving your legacy. Obviously the legacy that you left at Sacred Heart was, for the record books. When we go down the road 10, 15, 20 years and people see Callan Taylor in the Sacred Heart record books, how do you want people to remember you based on, you know, how you played at Sacred Heart and even beyond that?
I think something that I always just tried to do as a player was just play my hardest. So I think that's something I really want people to remember me by. Like, she just played her ass off and did whatever the team needed her to do. You know, I think I was a pretty, I would say, a good teammate, I hope, and just a team player, really selfless too. I think also sometimes to a fault, Coach Swanson might say that there were times when Callan, shoot the ball or whatever. but I think, yeah, people, I just want people to remember me. They look back and just say, you know, she was a great teammate, you know, worked really hard to get, you know, all the awards that she did. But and then also just a good person. I think I like to think that I'm a good, genuine, nice person. So hopefully that's there too.
Well, I mean, as a student here and someone who is invested in Sacred Heart sports, to be able to get to talk to you and you know, kind of reminisce and go down memory lane about, you know, your time at Sacred Heart, it really is an honor for me. So thank you for joining me. You know, I enjoyed this. You know, like I said, I remember watching you when I was, you know, when I was younger, and now being able to talk to you about your Sacred Heart career, it really means a lot. So thank you for joining me.
Yeah, no, thank you, Dan, so much. This was awesome. And I wish you the best of luck in your journey as well. And yeah, this was great.
Once again, thanks to Callan for hopping on the podcast and being able to talk about so much. I mean, at that time, Sacred Heart women's basketball was one of the better mid-major programs in the country. What Ed Swanson had turned the women's basketball program into was a consistent winner, a possible NCAA tournament team every single year with the talent they brought in. You had Callan Taylor, Maggie Cosgrove, and then even you go later, Hannah Kimmel is who we brought in. And then that success continued on when Jessica Minetti took the job, that they have made the conference tournament every single year that they've been a part of the NEC. So that is a record that has obviously never been matched, possibly may never be matched, to sustain more than two decades of success within the conference. And I know within the past couple of years, they've made the tournament semifinals each of the past 5 years, and four of the past 8 years, they've made it a postseason tournament appearance. So, you know, success and the women's basketball program at Sacred Heart go hand in hand. And I expect it to continue for a long, long time, especially this year. There's a lot of high expectations around the women's basketball team. So it'll be exciting to see who they will be playing in non-conference play and as the schedule comes out, but just to see what they can accomplish and hopefully make it back to an NCAA tournament, which would be the first time since 2012 when the team was led by Callan Taylor. But that'll wrap it up for episode number 4 of the Beyond the Shoe Box Score podcast. Once again, so happy to have people listening, giving me feedback, making this a conversation between myself and the listeners. And it just continues to get better next week with my next guest, another member of a Sacred Heart basketball program, Phil Gaetano, the all-time leader in assists at the Division I level for Sacred Heart, joins me to talk about his journey being from Connecticut, playing college basketball in Connecticut, to now moving over to the coaching range as well and coaching for a team that had some battles with Sacred Heart over the past season. That episode will come out next Monday at noon, as well as all the episodes here. You can find them on Anchor, Spotify. It's continuing to expand, this podcast is. So thank you to everybody who has listened. I really appreciate it. But until next week, we'll see you next time.